So hello, everybody, and welcome to our open coaching call. This is our, I think it's our last one in July, maybe our second, first one in July. I don't remember. But we're here to support you in whatever way you need, whether it be reviewing a lab, talking about a case, sharing some stuff with your own health, whatever it is that you need support on, work, you know, questions about materials. And it's one thing that people forget that they can come here and just ask, like, in this module, this was happening, and you know, what can I do? And I don't understand it. Or I need more help or whatever. So that's what these calls are for. So I know that Drina submitted a case, not a case, but a lab to review a lab. She hasn't gone over Genova's yet. So that'll be a good one. I don't do Genova as much as I do Doctor's Data. So that's one that, you know, they're similar, but there's some differences. So we'll go through it together. How's that?
Great.
You want to tell us a little bit about the, let me put it up on the screen, share screen. And then tell us a little bit about the client that this was run for.
Well, she's 37, has birthed four children, mm-hmm. and has really been having a lot of trouble keeping weight on. And so she also has a lot of problems with her digestive tract in general. Mm-hmm. So her family medicine practitioner ran this test and then did not give her any information on what to do. And so she brought me the copy, and I thought, you know, this is a great opportunity, you know, for me to learn about how to read these properly. I can see, you know, here at a glance, it's saying beneficial, you know, bacteria, but it, and it gives you all these signs, but I don't understand it very well. But at any rate, her condition and her children, as per every child after the first child, their digestion is getting, you know, as bad as hers. So, you know, it's lack of nutrients as a mama, you know, over time, two of her children were very premature in birth. And two were full term.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
She nursed her children, natural births. But dietarily, I've gotten her to at least go gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free. So that's kind of where I started, you know, mm-hmm. everything. And that was about a month maybe before this test.
Okay. So she'd been a little bit. And then in terms of what she had been eating, what was she eating?
Oh, processed foods, lots of corn, you know, tacos. She's a Hispanic gal, so the basic Hispanic lifestyle, you know, lots of processed foods, processed beans, yep. lots of canned things, and not mm-hmm. doing, you know, much on her own.
Okay.
So, you know, cleaning. I'm good.
I was going to say, that sounds good. I mean, that sounds not good, but it sounds like you have a lot to work with, right? And it sounds like what you were saying about her children all being born with, you know, premature weights and other problems that they're having, it sounds like this problem has been going on for a long time, right? This digestive imbalance, because she's probably not, doesn't even have enough nutrients to pass on to these kids, right?
Right, right. Yeah, she, I think she birthed her first child at 17.
Oh.
And so she was pretty young, and that was her healthiest child. But I can say she's always been very, very underweight. She's a very tall girl. She's like 5'10", and, you know, weighs right at around 120 pounds at 5'10".
Wow.
Pretty small. Yeah. The only time she actually has any weight on her body is when she's pregnant.
And it's all in the front.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then she loses all of it as soon as the baby's born, and then more.
And then more. Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, you start to suspect, first of all, malnourishment, gut imbalances, and, you know, poor protein absorption and et cetera, nutrient absorption. But you also suspect when you hear that, that somebody can't keep weight on, especially eating a Hispanic type diet, because it's usually the opposite, is there a parasite that's
right,
consuming all her calories. So that's
right.
The question I would be asking.
And the parasitology showed nothing.
Yeah. And that, it's funny that doctors will do these tests and then not know what to look for, right? Because it's obvious to anybody on the front page that there's some imbalances here.
Yeah.
And we'll go through that. But interestingly enough, they probably run it for the parasitology. They see the parasites say negative. They don't see what all the other stuff are going on. Now, the thing is, a lot of times parasites do show negative on a test, and you need to do some layering and work with it before you actually see the parasites show. Mm-hmm. And it's, was this a triple, like a three stool sample, or was it a one stool sample?
Because that makes it says 2200 GIFX comprehensive profile. So I'm not sure. I don't. That is not a question that I asked because I didn't know to ask that. How many stools she had to do in order to, in order to get this.
Yeah, because if they have a comprehensive, some of them have a comprehensive parasitology, and it'll say X1, X2, or X3. That'll tell you how many. It costs a little bit more for each one, but you're more likely to see something when you do that.
Yeah, it looks like they only tested for three different ones.
Oh, so this might be just their regular comprehensive, not the parasitology, and it just shows some of the major
parasites
they look for versus a comprehensive parasitology.
Okay.
All right. So her secretory IgA is up. So she's got inflammatory markers. There's something that her body's fighting off. Clearly, because she's got the elevated secretory IgA and the EPX, I forget what it is, but it's a inflammatory marker. We can look at that in a minute. She also isn't digesting her fats or proteins, and they're showing up in her stool. Right? They're just passing on through her. And beneficial bacteria are low, right? So her commensal bacteria, those are the ones that could become pathogenic given that there's not enough of the good guys, and they are close to the red, right? So this shows this is really healthy. This is where we want her to be. Uh-huh. This is in the marginal area, and she's at the way bottom of the marginal area, and she's almost in the red. So she's got some of these commensals, which could be, causing this dysbiosis in her gut. And then here's the relative abundance. So these are some of the major commensals, I guess, that they're showing. And this is what a healthy patient, a healthy cohort would look like. This is what hers does. So she doesn't have a good diversity. Yeah. Balance and diversity of these guys.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if so this one shows a lot of stuff. Okay. So she's got, this is a new way they do it. I like this.
Yeah, and the arrows mean something. So the skinny arrows mean something. Let's see. I was trying to read through that to comprehend that the thicker arrows. Okay, the arrows indicate the arrow down, of course, is falling below, and the arrow up is falling above. But if it's a thick arrow, the cells with bolded arrows indicate Jehovah's clinical condition cohort, and most test results falling above versus below. So skinny would be falling below versus above. And then opposite is below versus the reference range.
I'm reading this now. The arrows indicate Jehovah's clinical cohort test falling below or above the reference range that is greater than that of their test cohort. The up and down indicates falling below and above the range that are greater than that. Huh? Those with bolded arrows indicate Jehovah's clinical condition cohort had more test results falling above versus below the reference range compared to that of their healthy cohort. So it's clear that so they're looking at people with these particular conditions and how she compares to those folks with these particular conditions in terms of this particular bacteria. She's got high on this bacterioides, and it's showing that it can be markers for these other conditions, and she, not inflammatory bowel disease necessarily on the bacterioides, but certainly on the first group. And it looks like she's actually falling above where the healthy cohort in that group for these particular conditions. So she's at high risk.
Okay.
Just look at this. She's at high risk. Yeah. All of these conditions appear based on the distribution of her gut flora. Mm-hmm. Right. And you don't have to go into each one in particular. It's just knowing, right, that so the big that bifido doesn't have anything marked.
So Bifidobacterium longum doesn't have anything either. Does that mean that she's okay in that area?
I'm guessing that it does. I'd have to read through the details a little bit more, but I'm guessing that the ones that where we're looking at the reference range. Mm-hmm. So she's high on these guys, the Prevotella and the Bacteroides. She's low on the Clostridium, which isn't the Clostridium. I mean, it could be good because there's some Clostridiums that are pathogenic and some Clostridiums that are actually commensals or normal gut flora. She's low in this Roseburia, and these are all Firmicutes. So if you remember from the gut repair program, the Bacteroides and the Firmicutes, right? And they're classes of bacteria. And the Firmicutes tend to help make people more fat, and the Bacteroides tend to make people more thin. Okay. And in her particular case, she's high in these Bacteroides, which increases metabolic rate. Like they're not eating up, they're eating up her stuff, so she's not getting it. Whereas here, she's eating up her stuff when they have this, so they're not getting it, and you end up with more of a tendency towards obesity. So she has highs over here and lows over here.
What you're saying is the Bacteroides actually create obesity. The Firmicutes
The Bacteroides create
thinness,
leanness.
Okay.
And the Firmicutes create, I always think of it as Firmicutes, F means fat. The Firmicutes will make a person tend towards fat. So she's got highs on the Bacteroides and lows on the Firmicutes.
Okay.
Which would mean that she, you know, it makes sense with what's going on, that her thinness, her seemingly high metabolic rate can be related to the gut bacteria.
Yes. Okay.
Right. These guys are eating up all her calories, the Bacteroides, and the Firmicutes they're not there to, you know, slow it down. I'd have to really look back at these, but from my quick look at what they're describing, it looks like these are putting her at high risk of specific conditions. And it looks like she's got some checked in just about all of them. And, so this is something that needs to get straightened out. So addressing her gut is big. You said you took her off dairy, gluten, and sugar. That's a great start. But taking this person through a gut repair, working with her, if she's taking for probiotics, is she not taking probiotics, getting her to eat fermented foods, those sort of things, getting her to chew her food more, slow down. She probably bolts her food down. She's got 4 kids to take care of. You know, like boom, 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 there's no chewing happening. So right. Just really helping her with enzymes and probiotics to help her actually get this food digested. Those are the places, the obvious, you know, easy starting places to go from.
Well, and with the fat malabsorption, she needs something with more ox bile or something like that in that to help her with those fats.
I don't jump into ox bile. I'm really careful about that. I usually jump into ox bile if I know the person has a gallbladder issue.
Okay.
So I would start with an enzyme that's high in lipase.
Lipase, okay.
Yeah. So, but it looked like she has some protein malabsorption too. So you want to focus, you know, it could be just a general one would be a good starting place. And then you can see how that goes. If she's, well, my digestion's a little better. You're always asking about symptoms because you're not going to run this test every week, right? So you're asking about symptoms. How's your digestion? How does it feel? How much bloating, gas?
Yes.
Feel like? Are you constantly hungry? So really get a good baseline and numerical scores on that digestion. So and then you can start her on stuff and say, sometimes people will just take a digestive enzyme and it's like, oh my God, this is amazing. Bitters. I would do bitters for sure.
Okay.
Bitters is going to stimulate her own secretion. It'll move the bile. It'll help her own secretions. And I'm so careful with ox bile. I really reserve that for when people have no gallbladder or they have a known gallbladder issue that they're trying to resolve because it can cause diarrhea, dumping syndrome. The last thing this really skinny woman needs is diarrhea.
Okay. You know?
Yeah, so I'd be careful with that, but I would definitely start with the bitters, the chewing, digestive enzymes, probiotics.
So your digestive enzyme with hydrochloric acid or not?
Well, it depends. That's the other thing I'm super careful about. I almost never put people on HCL unless we've done an HCL challenge and it's real clear. And really ruling out, do they have a compromised lining? Right. Mm-hmm. If they have a compromised mucosa lining and you put them on HCL,
right,
you're going to make them worse. So I'm really careful with that. I'll do an HCL challenge, but very, very slowly. You know, I'd even have somebody, if they do have symptoms, that I would actually have them get some empty capsules and open up their HCLs, pour half out and do half of them so they can really titrate it carefully in doing an HCL challenge. But I don't ever jump into bile or the HCL at all, unless I've gone through the stages and gone, okay, we still need more. Right.
Okay. Well, I had her test a couple different ones. BioGest was one of them with HCL. And then the other was one that is the Pure Encapsulations Digestion Ultra that doesn't have any of that in there.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt better on the BioGest.
Okay. Well, there you go. If she didn't get worse, you already have tried it, but I'm just going to get, I'm giving you a warning. That's obvious. Right. There are people who need it and do well with it,
yes.
But I would go really slowly with people, but you really want to get a good digestive history with them and see, well, you know, they had a history that they used to have an ulcer. They had gastritis. They had reflux. Those are the people you want to be super careful with, any protease enzymes on an empty stomach, with the ox bile even, or if they have a history of diarrhea, you want to be really careful with that. So yeah, you can experiment with it, but I'm just saying, you got lucky here. That it was good, but if she had had any kind of irritation in her upper GI, that could have really bothered her.
Okay.
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 Okay. Good. Okay. So the elastase. I'm guessing. Let me just go back and read this silly thing again because I'm confused. The arrows indicate the condition cohort test results falling below or above the reference range that is greater than that of the healthy cohort. Okay, so she fell below on her elastase, which just supported what we're talking about, right? She's low on her elastase. That means that she does need pancreatic support. So she needs the enzymes.
Okay.
Fecal fat was high. Triglycerides, fecal triglycerides, fecal lung, so all of that. Cholesterol. So I guess they were looking at the reference range, but they're also comparing it to their people with these different conditions, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I'd have to read more. That's, like I said, this is the first time I've seen this version of the report. But, you know, when you think about that, it makes sense. Like, it's, again, saying she's got markers that put her at risk.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially the high cholesterol, you know, that shows, you know, it's insulin resistance, even though she's the thin side of insulin resistance.
Yes. Yes. And just the dietary changes alone you've put her on are going to make a huge difference there. Is she somebody that would be willing to test her sugars?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah, calprotectin is an inflammatory marker, so a little bit high on that. Usually I like to see the numbers, though. I'm getting a little disoriented here when I don't see my numbers. Butyrate's low. Right. Ah, here's the numbers. This is the chart I'm used to seeing. We should be greater than 500. She's in this one, is 200 range.
Above.
So she's very low, definitely needs that pancreatic support, the enzyme support. And, you know, when we see pancreatic support needed in the gut, we also suspect that maybe the pancreas, the exocrine and the endocrine part, right? The exocrine part's functioning poorly. Maybe the endocrine is too. Fecal fat is way up at the high end, her triglycerides, long chain fats, cholesterol, and then phospholipids. Yeah, the calprotectin is should be between 50 and 120. So, oh no, it's in the gray. No, she's in the green range. I was reading that wrong. So that's fine because that's an inflammatory marker. We look at that for IBD, inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's, or ulcerative colitis. Okay. Eosinophilic protein, she's a little high on that. That's an inflammatory marker. So there's some inflammation. It's unlikely to be IBD, but certainly IBS is a possibility and, you know, some other, certainly leaky gut and all that. Look at this. Look at that IgA. Holy cow. Okay, off the charts, which means this, her body's like trying really hard to fight an infection and she's going to need some help. So I think she's going to need some antimicrobial support. Butyrate looks okay. So here's what I think, and I've got to read more about this and I'll look at this. With those numbers, when they compare it to the diseases, if you find that if you just say, oh, it's in the range, oh, that's in the range, that's in the range. Well, it's in the range that's considered normal. But when we look at these conditions, how does it compare? How do you compare to people with these conditions?
Mm-hmm. The butyrate is low. Is that part of the fats? Like,
Yeah, these are the short chain fatty acids.
Okay.
So the butyrate is low percentage wise. The concentration isn't bad, but percentage wise compared to the others, it is. So, you know, butyrate, you can do butyrate enemas even for people. You know, you can do get the butyrate in. The bifidobacter will make butyrate or help you to make butyrate, right? So we need good gut flora. I find that arabinogalactans help to bring up the butyrate. Arabinogalactans is usually, it's a starchy, well, it's kind of a prebiotic from larch. And it's definitely a larch tree. And it definitely can be helpful in this particular case. Beta-glucuronidase is way low. Let's see. Okay, so here's where we actually see these commensals. The two Prevotella and the other, and the low ones here. Her bacteria, bifido is, it's not out of range low according to their chart, but it's too low for my taste.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely should be really much more hefty.
Well, it's not even in the green. It's kind of in that little white area.
Yeah, it's in that gray. Yeah. That kind of area where it's, you know, yeah. So I'd want to see her bifido come up, and that's, again, looking at her probiotics and giving her some extra on the bifido side. You can't go wrong with giving people extra bifido, and a lot of times, you know, does she have indications of possible SIBO? Does she get bloated and gassy after eating? And then you're going to be really careful when you're doing, when you're not sure, when in doubt, start with bifidus,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you can go to the D-lactic acid-free strains of lacto.
So you would you do a rotation with the bifido and the D-lactate?
My gut would be to do the D-lactate and add the extra bifido.
Okay.
But I have to see how much bifido is in the D-lactate. But that's what I've done with a lot of folks.
Okay.
Yeah, look, the E. coli is high. Oxalobacter is high. That eats the oxalates, so that's good. Okay. Yeah, probiotic. Okay, so here's culture. Is there a thing in NG? Looks like she's either not tested or not. No growth. So yeah, here you go. Look at this. No lacto also.
No lactobacillus growth.
Yeah, okay. Right. And so she's got high on the non-pathogenic part of the E. coli, but again, it's throwing the balance out. She's got no lactobacillus. Her bifidus is decent here, although it didn't show up decent here. Interesting. I guess it's like a comparison, but I usually like to see 4+ on those.
What about the 4+ on the, is that?
It wouldn't be a problem if lacto and that, if they were all 4+. It's a non-pathogenic strain, but again, it can get wonky if you don't have all the strains that the person really needs.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would get the D-lactic acid free and the bifidum, and maybe there's just enough bifidum in the D-lactic acid free formula to keep her from having to get two.
And what about the lactobacillus?
That would be, there's four D-lactic acid free species of lactobacillus in
that's right.
Yeah, you just don't want to just, if you suspect any kind of SIBO situation, just go safely and do the D-lactic acid free. And I'm tempted to start that, anybody with that. Mm-hmm. And then go, okay, you did great with that, or you didn't get gas and bloating. Let's just add a little bit of this other. Let's now add some sauerkraut or some kefir or some other food-based stuff. But I think in her situation here, I would get her to do the foods, test her, you know, make sure she doesn't get bloaty, gassy and all that from the foods, but start her with a good base.
Okay.
Especially if she's new to the stuff, she's not going to necessarily eat enough of that stuff.
Yes.
Right. No over or parasite seen. Yeah, so it's one. One negative specimen does not rule out possibility of parasitic infection. So I still think there may be parasitic stuff going on. They only tested for the major ones. I hardly ever see these off. You know, it's really rare that I see these biggies, Giardia. People usually know when they have Giardia, they just get stopped pooping. And to me, they're all big ones. So yeah, it was one. They didn't do the specific detailed parasitology.
Okay.
So that's something to look at. I mean, what I would do, instead of sending her off for another stool test and looking for parasites, I'd go with what you have here. And I would just start making these changes. If you don't see her progressing the way you expect her to, then you might really go looking for it. You know, you want to see her start to gain weight. Well, looking at the bacteria, let's look at the Firmicutes versus the Bacterioides. Usually we're doing the opposite, right? So here she has we just saw down below, she doesn't have any lactobacillus, and they're in this Firmicutes phylum, right? So maybe not with the, well, where's the bacteria? They don't show them. The bifido's out of there, not neither one. So you're safe with that. But I would say, yeah, getting that lactobacillus up is going to be really helpful, getting her to chew her food. I think the arabinogalactans, which would feed the probiotic organisms there and help to produce more of the butyrate and the other short chain fatty acids. And if all that, you know, have your like planned out, then okay, let's do this. And now if that doesn't work, let's add this and let's, you know, so have in there, you can always add butyrate. Mm-hmm. That's one of the possibilities. And then you can always look at antimicrobial to kill off the unwanteds. But first create an environment that's hospitable for the good guys. Like really get in there with high dose, you know, work it up because you want to be careful about high dose probiotics, but work it up to therapeutic doses because sometimes you can put somebody on 300 or 400 billion organisms and they're feeling like miraculous recovery in 3 or 4 days. Not always, but in a case like this where it's so far out of balance and you start bringing it into balance, you might start with does she have symptoms of SIBO or do you still have to find that out?
Well, she says she has gas and bloating after every meal and it's almost immediate. So that's, you know, that's a sign of SIBO. So
I'd start with the D-lactic acid free, get her going, get some of that to settle down, teach her some of the vagus nerve stuff.
Yes.
Right. Help her with the motility.
The breathing
and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's certain things you can help that with, like, what's that called? Modal Pro from Pure Encapsulations or Amla. You know, some of that stuff that helps with the motility. Make sure she's spacing. It's hard with this thin person though. The spacing of the meals is going to be the hard one to help with that gut motility. With somebody overweight, it's like, yeah, space your meal 6 hours. You need it for everything else. With somebody who's that thin, it makes it harder.
Mm-hmm. Makes it harder. And especially with 4 kids, and every time the kids are snacking on something, so is she.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a problem too.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can at least get her to stop eating 3 hours before bed to facilitate certainly the insulin resistance markers, but the motility, mm-hmm. you know, give her a longer stretch of not eating.
Okay.
And see what you can do with that. With 4 kids, what I find too is that a lot of folks just don't eat enough. You start to eat and your kid interrupts you and you start to eat. And I'd be thinking, why the heck am I so hungry? These kids are like, and then I go see my plate and it's got only 3 bites taken out of it. Oh, no wonder I'm still hungry. Yeah. But I had that remembrance of putting fork to mouth. And so I think that's the sort of thing I'd ask her questions like, have you always been thin? It's been a problem for your whole life.
It has been. I've known her since she was like 16, 15, 14.
She's always been this way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And ask if she was as a child too, like, or was there a shift? Cause sometimes it's no, not was when we visited Aunt Susie in, you know, Costa Rica and I came home and I had diarrhea for 3 weeks and it was ever since then, right? That's when you start to really suspect some kind of parasitic thing that could be going on for all those years.
Okay.
So I would ask her, I know I've known you since you're 16. Were you thin as a little kid too?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And what kind of things? Oh no, I was good until I had my period, right? All of those questions, the antecedent type questions. What were you like? What was the last time you didn't have this symptom? And what was the situation that was going on that last year or two beforehand to find out what might have provoked it?
Okay. What would you recommend as far as if she decided she wanted to go through a parasitology since she's been through all the rest of this? Do you have one that just does parasitic testing?
Well, I'm pretty sure that you can get Genova to just do the parasitology. You can do Doctor's Data. I like Doctor's Data's report because they'll show you the breakdown. Pretty much any of the labs, you know, if she got her insurance to cover this and wants to do it again with Genova, just they can run the parasitology. Times three.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I've had people who've, and I don't know, you know, I haven't tested this myself, but some of my colleagues have told me that they do this. They'll get a parasitology times three, but to even increase the probability of getting it more, mm-hmm. so they will have the person use those three, but collect 6 days of stool. So on day one, they mix in, you know, they collect the stool. On day two, they mix the stool with day one's stool, and then they put it on there so they have more of an opportunity to maybe catch something. You can do it that way, which is a challenge when you have that many kids and you're having to deal with it. It's hard enough to collect stool 3 days in a row, but yeah. The 3 days is much more likely to catch something than the comprehensive parasitology where they're testing for a wide range.
Okay. So they have a comprehensive parasitology. Do you recommend that one over the parasitology times three?
Well, it's comprehensive parasitology times three.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Because that way they're testing a wide array of organisms. They're testing for it with 3 days worth of stool.
Okay.
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 All right.
I have one more question, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. I have a man that I'm working with that has PKU.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's never had a very healthy diet. And of course, with PKU, he's got trouble with anything with phenylalanine, you know, and anything that produces that. But I was trying to figure out if there was an amino acid that doesn't have phenylalanine in it.
If there's a supplement, an amino acid supplement?
Yeah, they call them large neutral amino acids, but if you knew of anyone who actually has that available to be able to be purchased.
I don't know. I would guess that some of the supplement companies would, it's not a huge disease though, right? So mm-hmm. from a perspective of doing the research and creating the packet, you know, for a supplement that's only going to sell very little.
Right.
It's a hard one. I know you can get individual amino acids.
Right.
You might be able to get like, say branch chain amino acids, which is just the three, and you might be able to get another, you know, like collagen forming amino acid. You might be able to do it. It's going to stay obviously away from anything that's neurotransmitter support because they usually have the phenylalanine in it,
mm-hmm.
but you might have to construct your own. There are companies though that will do custom mixes. So
really?
When you do an oat test, the GI effects test, call Genova and ask them who they use to customize the formulations. And because when you do a NutriVal with, they will say, here's the nutrients that we think you need. And, you know, this company can create it for you if you want. So you might be able to get them to create that.
Okay. Yeah. And is there anything that you recommend particularly for someone with PKU as far as a digestive enzyme particularly?
It's tricky because I don't, you know, enzymes are actually proteins, right? So the enzymes themselves, taking in the enzymes, you could be taking in proteins. So I don't know the particular structure of the proteins. You'd have to research to see, you know, a particular protease enzyme. What is the actual amino acid structure of that protein, you know, when it's broken down? Because that could be broken down into, that's a good question. I mean, when I was in school getting my master's in nutrition, we had a doctor talking about, this PhD guy talking about PKU. And here's was his comment. The best thing to feed kids that have PKU is candy and soft drinks.
Oh, my goodness.
And I, like, did the other, oh, my God. I said that thing to him. What's the problem? I, like, look, nobody's going to survive on candy and soft drinks. Like, yeah. So it's really challenging. And you want to be able to get them the proteins without risking. You know, and it's tolerance dose. So I think you really have to figure out or research a little bit more, because I have not worked with, you know, the last I, you know, dealt with PKU is back then when I was learning about it. Mm-hmm. But you want to look at their tolerance, like look at what statistically, how much is the max phenylalanine that could sneak in? Because obviously there's going to be phenylalanine getting into somebody, because even an orange has protein, right? How much phenylalanine's in the different foods, broccoli, right? There's some phenylalanine in broccoli. So what's that total volume over the course of a day that someone with PKU can't go above?
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
It's a tough one.
So do you recommend something like plant proteins for him more so than... I mean, is that going to be the same?
I would look at every one and look at the amount of phenylalanine in it.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But finding one that has low or no might be, you know, something to look at, and calling some of the companies that do, for you to look up specialty, you know, custom supplements. Let's see. I mean, without having to go buy each individual amino acid and customize it yourself. Here we go. I mean, here's one that Makers Nutrition, that you email them a formula and they give you a quote. Custom vitamin packs. No, that's not it. Custom formulation supplement. Yeah, there's a number of them. Do a search and then just try calling some of these places and seeing if they can support you in creating a formulation. And they may have already done it for somebody, you know. There may be some docs out there. I would look up, like, are there any specific clinics that work with people from a functional perspective, I would say, because otherwise you're going to get candy and soft drinks, so you should feed them. And we know we don't want to go there. Yeah, so I would. That's the research path I would take with it.
Okay, great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome. All right, who's on? Who has questions? Who has comments? Let's see. Lots of comments in the comment field. Let's see. This test was from Genova, and it's the first time I've seen that particular format of it with that chart, so I need to do some research on it. Usually you can go into Genova and look up their interpretation guides. So if you go to their site and just type in, you know, they'll have a, they think they used to anyway, have a little thing that said resources for practitioners, and you can look up in there the interpretation guides, and it may have more information about this. Okay. Okay. Yeah, they're talking about alternating, and I'm a fan of that too. Susan, what was it was said about specific probiotics and SIBO? SIBO will thrive with probiotics that produce lactic acid, so D-lactic acid free. The organisms that produce lactic acid will feed the organisms in the small intestine and can increase the gas production. So D-lactic acid free. The only two that I know of where you can get is Claire Labs and Custom Probiotics. Plus extra, you can always do extra Bifido if you think they need it. And Lynn says, how old are her kids? Get them to help make healthy food for dinner. And also, that's a good question, is what was her mom's pregnancy like with her? And Lynn found one, Pure Formulas, Amino Acids, Ecological Formulas. Let me click on that one and see. Let me share my screen on it so you guys can see it. Share screen. Okay, where'd it go? I just opened it. Where's my, here we go. All right, so Pure Formulas is showing this ecological formulas without phenylalanine or tryptophan. There you go. Thank you, Lynn. Simple as that. It's in the chat. Beautiful. Only phenylalanine and tryptophan are excluded. Beautiful. If you put somebody on something like that and you find that they have a tendency to low melatonin or low serotonin and you're wanting them to have more tryptophan, you can always add 5-HTP or another tryptophan. So they could be taking two things instead of a lot of individual ones. Cool. All right. Anybody else? Questions, comments, things you want to share, things you want to ask about? And I'm totally fine with ending this early tonight. So got about 5,000 things to do before our big weekend thing this weekend. Raise your hand or open your line. There's Janine. Hi, Janine.
Hi. Kind of going with the parasites and, recovering with the mold, getting all this out of my system. My labs, the month before, were okay. My polycythemia, the blood was staying normal. But now I just did one and got the results, and my blood's thickened up again. And I'm wondering if, because I'm moving, I'm doing a parasite cleanse using the Mimosa Pudica and its Formula One, if that could be moving things around, causing that to.
And so, what was the test you did?
It's my hemoglobin and hemocrat, my blood for the polycythemia.
The polycythemia. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're saying that that dehydration can contribute to that. So, and as you're purging and parasites and anything like that, you need to keep that level up, right? Yeah. So if it's hemoglobin and hematocrit and RBCs high too.
Yeah. Actually that one did come up. It's at 5.30 and that one I talked about, but I'm thinking, when I saw my chiropractor on Friday, he looked at me and he said, you have a lot of toxins in my brain. And in my gut, and I told him I'm doing the parasite cleanse mold to get things moving. So,
and how much are you drinking? Are you making sure? And you want to drink more than you do?
I have a cup every time I walk by. I drink like 6 ounces. So, but I am taking spironolactone because of the ascites, which is 25 milligrams. But I don't do it every day. I do it every 3 days because I don't want to dehydrate.
Yeah. I just know that you're putting more strain on your kidneys. If you're releasing parasites and killing off mold and all that stuff, the kidneys are like really having to work harder, which means that hydration is super important. So it could be related.
Okay. So that's a green drink. I'm trying to get 3 of those down a day. And then
measure your water, weigh yourself. What do you weigh? What's half your body weight and fluid?
I lost weight too.
And then add a lot more. What's that? You lost weight. Okay.
Lost weight too, and I was like, wow. So,
but not to the point where you're too thin, right?
Huh?
Not to the point where you're worried that you're too thin.
No, it's just subconscious. I'm 135, so it's just my history. That's all.
Celebrate it.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Right. Celebrate it that your body's normalizing, increase your fluid intake, right? And measure it, because sometimes people think they're, okay, 6 ounces here, 6 ounces there. Oh, yeah, I drank 4 of these 6-ounce glasses. Big deal, right? I drank 6 of these 6-ounce glasses. Big deal, right? You would need 135, half of that, 63. That's bare minimum if you're not doing a cleanse. If you're out there sweating, 8 ounces for every 15 minutes you're out there sweating. And then I would add, for good measure, an extra quart for doing a parasite cleanse.
Okay.
And giving your kidneys that support.
Constantly drinking the water. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm going to add in 3 green juices on top of that.
Okay. That might help. That might help a lot.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. Susan.
I have a quick question regarding that ANA test on labs.
Mm-hmm.
I have 2 friends that are just like so focused on the ANA, and I know that shows autoimmune diseases, and it seems to be leaning towards lupus. Can you explain that? Because I feel like they're putting much too much weight, like they want to name whatever it is they have, and I don't know. I just, how do I respond to that?
I would say, what are you doing to try to improve this? It's an indication of an autoimmune. How high is it? Do they have other symptoms of lupus? It could be rheumatoid arthritis also has elevated ANA.
I guess the question is, the ANA always related to lupus, or could it be a variety?
It's related to an autoimmune disease. It's anti-nuclear antibodies. Right. Is it definitely lupus? No, but it's definitely related that there's an autoimmune thing. And they have particular weird ways of measuring it. But I'll tell you something that you can talk to them about. We had somebody who was in our program years ago, a practitioner program, and she had had a test done, and her ANA was like super high. And they're like, what the heck happened? And it was like super high, like, I don't know, 1,000 or more. And she was like, she brought it to a call. I'm like, what have you done differently? Like, what's going on here? And she had had cancer in her past, and it's a lot of stuff. And she's really working on herself. And I said, what's going on? What has happened? What has changed? She says, you know, the only thing that's changed since the last test, because I think they've been monitoring it for borderline, and it just shot up. I said, she said, the thing that changed since last time is my friend opened a gluten-free bakery. And I was supporting her and going in and getting these gluten-free things. And I said, okay, gluten cross-reactivity. So I gave her the list of the things. And I said, this is what you're getting. You can run the test for $225, or you could just avoid these things. Like, just assume it's everything on the cross-reactivity list and just avoid them. And she did. And she went back after 3 months and said to them, I want to rerun my ANA. She says, I think it was 3,000. That's what the number that sticks in my head. Once it's up that high, it never comes down. We're not going to waste your time or money to run it again. She said, I insist. I want this to run. I want to see. It went down to below 100 borderline in 3 months of avoiding those cross-reactive foods. So if your friends are like my typical friends, they eat gluten, they eat dairy, they haven't done a leaky gut protocol. They're stressed out. Their blood sugar's all over the map. So really what they should be focusing on is not the numbers, but what are they doing with their lifestyle? Yeah, focus on it. Do it. Bring it down. But what are they doing? So I'd ask them, what are they doing to bring it down? Are they taking the steroids that the doctor has recommended? Are they just watching it? Is it a wait and see situation? But yeah, it's an autoimmune, right? And we know how to work with autoimmune conditions.
Right. And I guess, you know, from what I'm learning, it almost doesn't matter what it's called.
Exactly. And
how do you
explain that to people?
Get that across to people who just, they want names for things. They want.
Okay, so they have an autoimmune disease. That's fine. Let them have a name. But say, you know, autoimmune diseases rarely come in triplets. They usually come in triplets or quadruplets. You likely, if you have this autoimmune condition, have some other autoimmune conditions. You had somebody in the room. You have other autoimmune conditions, but we don't need to test for all of them. We can, if you want, do the Cyrex panel 6 and array 5 or 6. I can't remember now. They created more. I think it's 5. And you'll do all these antibodies at $600. And, you know, we'll test for 37 different autoimmune conditions. But then what? Are we going to do something different because you have a collagen one, or if you've got the outward manifestations of it, right? You may be supporting collagen different than you're going to support thyroid. So in that regard, it could be good to name it. But really, if you want to address the underlying, it's all going to be the same.
Right.
Tom O'Brien explains it real well, and I know you've got access to his course, but he talked about it. I loved how he talked about you got somebody and they fell into the pool, right? The initial thing is you're going to throw the life preserver in to get them out. They're in this lake, right? And they're struggling, and you throw them the life raft. And then what? Do you leave them in there? No, you want to get them out, right? So that's similar to what the doctors are doing with autoimmune. Let's just throw them a life raft. Let's give them some steroids to get the inflammation down. They're just going to keep making the inflammation, and it's going to go from one to another to another. They're just going to keep getting worse. They're going to need more and more of this stuff. I mean, read it. Read the pathophysiology of autoimmune diseases. It's a life sentence. They tell people all the time.
Right.
The only thing we could do is address your symptoms. What if we could address your causes? And then, you know, look it up. I'm sure you can find some great papers in Dr. Tom's work, you know, in the gluten-free course.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Tons of stuff in there. Yeah. And just say, look, this is the situation. This is what autoimmune is. I did a talk on autoimmune. Well, he did one at Shine last year. Do you look back at some of his
roots? I went through his gluten-free certification.
And you went through it, right? So you have access to all of his studies.
I'd forgotten about that. Thanks very much.
That's how I would, and his book, The Autoimmune Fix, or whatever he calls it. There was a bunch of autoimmune books that came out at the same time, The Autoimmune Cure, The Autoimmune Fix, The Autoimmune whatever. But basically it's very good information there. And say, here, read this book. Gift it to them. Buy them a copy of his book.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just curious about that.
Yeah. Well, they want to measure because everybody wants a disease, right? We want to have a diagnosis.
But I guess what threw me too is the fact that it's such a broad spectrum and it's just autoimmune. And then like my one friend, it's like, but the doctor can't figure out which one it is. And I'm like,
Who cares?
Right. That's
who cares?
Wants to know. I was like, well, whatever.
Then run the Cyrex. Tell her she can run the Cyrex panel. So yeah, run the Cyrex panel.
This doctor's already working with her. That she's been working with for quite some time now, and she's already eating real clean, but she just still wants to know.
Yeah, if that's the case, then tell her to request the Cyrex Array 5.
Oh, okay.
Because that'll give her 36 different ones, the most common ones. She may freak out if she finds she has some antibodies to her heart or brain.
Yeah, I think I'd rather not know.
But then you go and you talk to Dr. Tom, he says, yeah, when I was first talking to him years ago on my radio show, and he talked about how he first discovered he had some autoimmunity going on, and he did this Cyrex array, and they said, do you know you have 3 brain antibodies? And he said, no, you must have run somebody else's test. He goes, no, we ran it again. And he said, well, why would I have brain antibodies? So I said to him, I said, but you're on a gluten-free diet, right? He goes, well, most of the time. He goes, that's when I made the switch. I've had to. And he cleared it up. He went completely gluten-free. He did leaky gut protocols. He checked for heavy metals. He did all the stuff we know how to do. 6 months later, went back, gone. How many people are running around with antibodies to their various parts? Now, for me, all I need to know is there's one. That's the screening is good because you don't know which one to test for. And if you test for them individually, it costs you a bloody fortune, like $1,500 or $2,000. So you run the array, it gives you everything, and you go, oops, better do something. And a lot of people need that on paper to be able to do something. Hopefully, she's working with a practitioner who is giving her some good stuff to do as opposed to.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I think so. But I'm not positive. Give
me the book.
I know he's big on supplements, unfortunately, but so many are.
Yeah. But if you don't take away the cause, the supplements are just throwing life preservers at it. Band-aids, life preservers, all the same stuff. And somebody, we need band-aids, right? There's nothing wrong with a band-aid. But the thing wrong with a band-aid is we're not dealing with the underlying. If we had a big old hole in our hand and it's not approximated, it's so far away that it's not going to heal, and we put a band-aid on it and we walk around thinking that we've done something good, when we take the band-aid off, it's going to be the same or worse. because it might have gotten infected too. So that's the problem we run when we're doing Band-Aids. We want to do Band-Aids and root cause analysis at the same time.
Cool.
Thank you. Good question. All right. Who else? Any other questions? Let's see. Cool. All right. I don't see any other questions, comments. Good. Open your mic. There you go.
Because I was curious because she was talking about lupus. So I grabbed my labs from the rheumatologist a few months ago. And he has this on here, immunological studies, C3 and C4. I've never seen that.
That's complement. Complement.
Okay.
Those are particular immune compounds.
Okay. And my C3 was 129 and their base is from 87 to 200. So I figure I'm okay.
Yeah, if you're in the range, yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if we had any info on this under the shield.
You might see it in that. You might also see it in the immune system module. Yeah, we talked definitely about that stuff. I don't know if I talk about it. I tend to go over the heads of most lay people, so I might say it in SHIELD. But for sure, I think it's module 20 or something like that. I have a lot of stuff on. I think it's the immune testing module that I have.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Good questions. We're learning. We're all learning. How much more water would you recommend during a liver cleanse? You know, I think we have to judge, but I would say probably it depends on what they're taking. If they're taking a bunch of like powders and potions and all that, I would say maybe an extra, depending on their size, like another half, not half their body weight, but maybe a quarter of their body weight. I'm just guessing at that, but I'm saying that that might be a good place to start. Like for me, I would say an extra quart, which is half of my body weight. A little more than that, but that's okay. Lynn, did you have something to add?
No, I had a comment about something else.
Okay, go for it.
You know, we were talking about doctors that don't, they'll get labs or they'll poo-poo labs, like you said, because they don't understand it. And it was talking with somebody today who had some questions about a lab that had high B6 on there. And so actually
I did some research on that a couple of weeks ago for someone. I don't know if it's the same person, but we had a long conversation about it.
Yeah. And it could be the same person. And high, that actually means you're deficient.
It could definitely mean that. And it's related to folks with MTHFR, but for this other person,
yes, exactly.
Genetics were like, huh, she doesn't have the MTHFR.
And that, it is the same person.
It is.
Right? But we did. Yeah. But I just bring it up simply to show that they see, oh, it's high. Something's wrong with you. They don't understand how the lab really works.
Yeah.
And,
And a lot of things show up like that. B12, for example, tissue levels of B12 are not correlated with serum levels. And if you have a high in there, it could be that it's not getting into the tissue. Same thing with B6. And this person wasn't taking any B6. In a minuscule amount in a B complex, like 4 milligrams or, you know, whatever, some tiny minutia amount. So she wasn't taking any. So it wasn't that. So if somebody shows up with a high B6 in their blood, the first thing I'll do is, let's just cut you down. If you're taking, like, they may be taking 300 or 400 milligrams.
Right.
Yeah. And she was concerned because she has some neurologic symptoms and she read that high B6 can cause it, but it's much higher. It's, well, first of all, it's been done with 500 milligrams taken over a long period of time consistently has created in a few cases. It's like one of those really rare things. But it actually helps with neuropathy.
Right. Exactly. And then there's the whole issue of how much are you actually absorbing, you know, just
I think
because
one of the
it's
things
showing
I tell
up
people,
there.
Yeah, a different format. I mean, if, and just try a little.
We were discussing that.
But food
and
forms.
And where she could get it. And,
Yeah. Food forms are hard to
Because she was you know, being she lives overseas, certain foods are more difficult. And so we were discussing where she could get them and how she could get them, use them. And
was she signed up for one of those strategy sessions?
She actually did.
You know, it's interesting because I put a specific thing at the bottom of the thing. About what?
Well,
upgrading.
Oh, good. Upgrading.
Yeah. That would be great.
Which is what I did yesterday with somebody.
Yes.
But,
because she re-upped, but she signed up at the silver level.
Right, exactly. And so she will do better at the gold level.
We've always known that. Yeah, we've always known that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I've been talking to Scott about that. But anyway, I just bring it up to show that this is why we do this. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, there's lots of quote-unquote coaching programs out there. And, you know, they use all these fancy apps and things like that. But they don't have what we have. And what we teach people is this intimacy that we have as we know our clients. We're not there just to get them to look, you know, model thin and be bodybuilders and whatever. We're to bring them to a place of good health and joy. Mm-hmm. And it's that internal place. It's not an external place.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you teach, and that's what we're trying to bring to the world as well.
And to get people out there doing the thing they're intended to do, right? To have the energy and the stamina to do it. And so for some people, it's they want to do the health coaching with people. For others, it's, you know, some artistic career that, you know, like Sarah with her paintings now. She's doing her paintings that she didn't have the stamina, the energy. She didn't have the health to do. But over the time we've worked with her, she's creating. She's going into her art room every day. And she gets such great joy from that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
So there's a need for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And that's kind of what sets you guys apart too, right? Because you're not just going, oh, here's the protocol for H. pylori. Here's the protocol for this or that. I hate the word protocol. I really do. Because I think that it implies that you have a disease. This is the protocol. It's a this for that. But it's not. It's what's all going into that and what's the underlying cause. And also, you know, really mastering that history piece, like knowing, like to look back as to what happened at what point in time to see what triggered this shift, if they've had a shift in their health. So cool. Yeah. Anybody else? The micronutrients module is so large. Yeah. I thought that was just going to be one of these little mini modules and talk a little bit about the vitamins and, you know, maybe make the whole module 6 hours. And then it was like an hour, hour and a half per nutrient. So because
it's close to 40 hours.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I had no idea. No wonder it took so long to finish that module. All right. Good guys. Anything else? Are you guys going to come to the weekend thing? I know Susan said she was. The 2 day, you got a free ticket. It's going to be an experiment, and I will share with you all the behind the scenes of, because it could make a really, if it's successful, it could be a really nice way for us to do live events, because live events are scary. The first time I did a live event, it was scary as all hell when the thing said, oh yeah, and you have a minimum food and beverage of $13,000 and you have to do this for this much. And I'm like, that's before I even know if I'm going to get anybody there. I'm paying you $20,000. And they're like, well, yeah, that's the way it works. And I just believed I was going to get people there. And I did it. And it was scary. And it's a lot of work. And so we're going to try to do it this way, where it's my living room. We spent less than that. You know, I think if you add up all the equipment, we got some new equipment, a new camera. We got a new little box so that I can actually use instead of this camera, which is like, you know, set, I can use a really cool video camera and zoom in and out. So we probably have paid $1,200 in equipment, in new equipment, right? That's it. Okay. Compared to $20,000 for, yeah. So I'm excited. We don't need to fly people in, right? We fly Lynn in, we fly all these people in, and it costs money to do that. We feed them. We feed all of our team. We feed our volunteers. I mean, it costs us a bloody fortune to run a live event. So if we could do this, we're still going to do Shine once a year because I just want to get people in the same room. And I'm going to look at doing small retreats for the public, right? Let's come together for 5 days. We'll rent a cabin. We'll get some, 10 people together or whatever. And we'll just spend the 5 days together doing the yoga, doing the meditation, doing the food preparation, looking at your labs, coming up with plans. So those are things I'm testing out as part of the model for the future that I can then share with you. How does it work? How do we do it? What are the pitfalls? Because there's bunches. And I'm willing to experiment with it. I'm getting closer to that, taking the plunge and saying, okay, we're going to do this little retreat because I love it.
And I think what you're doing too, in terms of sending out these emails with people to fill out the assessments, and it just keeps them engaged.
Yeah. Yeah, they're getting excited. They're posting on things. Hey, I'm filling out the assessment and I'm excited. And we just sent out it. We should have sent out an email, probably is out by now, about that. We set it up to do text messages to remind people. Because you know how the emails end up going all over the place? And so we're going to send text messages on every break to say, hey, come back from break soon. What's going to happen on the next segment is this. And here's a handout for you. Download it. Have it ready. So we don't have to overwhelm people with like, here's the 47 different pages that you're going to use during the thing, which, people get overwhelmed. Here's what we're going to use after the next break. Like, print it out and be ready for it. We'll keep adding it all to that one long page. But I'm excited to see some really cool transformations. And we're looking, we're going to make an offer to get people into our year-long program on Sunday. We have 600 people, probably more by now, signed up for this weekend. And we only have 20 seats left in our program, or 30, maybe 30. Anyway, we don't have that many seats left to give. It's a small percentage. So we're expecting to fill it by the end of Sunday.
It's an interesting model to follow. I mean, I'm paying attention to see, again, creating that engagement with the emails, because I'm talking to these people and, mm-hmm. And that is part of it too, is saying, hey, set up a time. I don't think any of us expected the response that we have had.
You said set up time to talk to us about how to get ready for this thing, with the idea that we could talk to them. And if they were a good candidate, we'd tell them about the program and that there's only this many seats left and this many people, and giving them a hot deal, like an $800 price reduction or $500, whatever it is, a big price reduction to join in advance. So yeah, I'll debrief the model. It's not really a model because I'm making it up as I go along. But we'll make it into a model. And maybe we'll do like a debrief call on how did it go and how can you incorporate, maybe start with a 1 day or a half day kind of thing like this, where you can get people into a room and use that speaking thing that we had Shannon and Mark talking about the other day. Use that in making an offer to folks at something like this, so you don't have to have the expense of renting a room and, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the response has been overwhelming. I know my particular calendar is pretty well full till the end of the month. So you know that this is something that speaks to people.
Yeah.
But it's just a really good model for people, for us as students to see. Not that, and maybe some of you are going to do something like this, but that whole idea of, it's the relationship building, the creating engagement. Yeah. Some of these people, this is their first real foray with us. And it's just a great way to do that. So
yeah, and you guys can do a mini or version of it. I mean, obviously you don't have the same size of a list as we did, but we set out with, I said to them, I want to get 200 people to pay to come to this thing. That would make me really happy. We hung up after the first call, the place where we had 204. Already. By the end of that night, we had 250. And now we've had almost 400 that have paid. I haven't checked today, that have paid money to be coming. And then you guys who get the free tickets and, people in our programs. You could do a mini version of this where you you send out people, you have people sign up for some kind of event. You know, low price. This is a low barrier to entry. On the call, we offered it for $47. Easy yes, right? I'll do it. And then you can do something like that. And then you offer to the people who joined, you say, hey, by the way, here's some of the things we're going to do. Here's some of the things we're going to do. If you're finding that you want to have some support in getting through that, let's have a conversation. And then when you get them in that one-on-one conversation, you can do a kind of enrollment conversation to let them know how you can support them and how you can support them beyond the event. And one of the things I set up for this event, I have to schedule it. Lynn reminded me to schedule it, was it included a follow-up session where we, an integration session. And the idea initially was we do the follow-up integration session and anybody that was on the fence, you know, we would help to move them towards making a decision, yes or no. But we may have the whole thing filled by then, and in which case I'm just going to have fun with that. I'm not going to have any pressure on me. Okay, we have 10 seats left. I got to do it. That's my hope. Anyway.
Yeah, I know for myself, again, obviously a much smaller thing. I'm doing I did one in May just to see if it would even work, a virtual vision board workshop. So I'm going to do another one in August because, you know, it's back to school and things change. And so I've been thinking about this model that I'm seeing here with you, with sending out things, you know.
In advance. Magazines, find some magazines, make sure you have a good sharp pair of scissors. Yeah.
Well, and besides that, it's, you know, start writing down what's of value to you. What are your goals? Just starting that piece there. I have a whole document and everything that they could start to fill out. So when we get there, they're all ready. And then, but even beforehand, you know, if you want to set up a time to talk about this before we get there. So, you know, just put it out there and see if anybody does set up that time. But again,
I'm sure they will. Yeah.
It's, and then it sets up that, you know, this is what we're going to do, but you know, for afterwards, if you want to use that, we can, you know, I can set you up and we'll do this hour long call where we can design your day after we do the call. And it's $97.
Yeah. And you keep your initial, I know that, you know, Shannon talked about offering a $2,000 program on that call. And, you know, maybe you don't feel comfortable doing that yet. I wasn't comfortable doing that when I first started out. Now I have no problem offering a $10,000 program from the stage. But I didn't feel comfortable back then, right? So you start with where you're comfortable, where you can get big groups of people together, right? A $27 vision board thing, a $47 two-day live stream. It was a no-brainer for people, right? When we have it at the live event, we have somewhere between like 80 and 120 people because there's expense, there's time, there's all that involved with it. But this makes it easier to get people together, your target audience. I love a workshop because then they're going to be doing something and you give them this stuff in advance of what they're going to do and you get them like really excited about coming. So yeah, lots of stuff that you can do. Yeah, we'll put a calendar, maybe it'll be in September, where I'll debrief this and just kind of, you know, give you guys some pointers as to how you can do something and how do we scale it to something that you can do. Even Susan, you don't have a list of that. You have people that you know, right? You have homeschooling moms. You have the harvest, you know, whatever, homesteading moms. You've got all those folks in your life. You can just send out a personal note to them, right? And invite them. You can call them and say, hey, I'm going to be doing this workshop. This is, sounds like something you'd be interested in. We're going to be doing this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, it's only $27, you know, just to cover my costs. And you can do it at home. You could do it online, however you want to do it. Play with it. You know, I first did these first time I did it was like in a room. I did it at my house. And I sent the invitation out on Monday for a thing on Tuesday. And I was doing it because I was in a class and I'm supposed to do this, right? All right, I'll at least show up. Three people will show up. I'll have practiced my speech and, you know, the stuff that they taught me. And I sent out the email on Monday, specifically said it was in Austin, Texas. We had 35 people sign up in one day. And then a few of them we threw out because we're like, it's in Austin and you're in California. Are you planning to fly here? Or was that a mistake? You know, but 30 or 29 did show up and I'm like scrambling to try to like set my kitchen living room area up into a classroom setting. And I made an offer. I didn't know better than to make a big offer. I made an offer straight from there to sign up for a $1,200 coaching program with me. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go for it. This is what I want to do with these people. A 6-month, $1,200 coaching program. And I got 3 people to sign up. So that hour of my time, 2 hours, I did 2 hours. It earned me $3,600. And I was sold at that point. I'm like, oh. And I didn't even do it right. I mean, I was just like mushing it together because it was my homework assignment. And I made $3,600 from my homework assignment, right? And I know that I could have gotten more people to sign up. I did them later. I got, 25 people in the room and sold 10 of them into a $300 program. Back then, I didn't think to do strategy sessions. I didn't want to do strategy sessions. I was moving away from the one-on-one thing. I was moving into group. So I was just offering group programs. And the same sort of thing, same sort of model that Shannon and Mark were talking about the other day can be used to sell a $47.97 program, a $300 program as you get more comfortable with it if you're moving towards the group thing, right? So there's a lot you can do to really expand this and get this message out. And the whole thing is we want to reach more people, right? We want to change this broken system. So, all right, guys, have a great evening. I'll unmute you all so you can say goodbye to each other. Thank you for the good lucks. I appreciate that. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. All right, thank there you go. Oh, you're still muted. Bye. Thank you. Bye. Appreciate it. It says all of them are unmuted, but I see all your things muted. That's really weird.
They may have muted themselves.
Oh, and then I can't unmute them if they mute themselves. Okay.
Cool. Thank you so much, Dr. Rita Marie. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you. Good luck with that one.
Thank
you, guys. Thank you.
And especially with the PKU guy. That, yeah. All right. Bye now.
Bye.
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 Bye.